Welcome to the Semicolon Podcast. This is a safe place to discuss a variety of topics centered around mental health. I am your host, Ashley McClellan, a social worker who has learned a lot about mental health along the way. I am here to be a voice, to support, and to learn with you all. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Semicolon Podcast. Thank you to everyone that is here listening. Today, I am honored to have another special guest. I am joined by my cousin, Christine, aka Chrissy. My cousin and I are 2 years apart, and we spent a lot of time together growing up. We literally lived on the same block, and Chrissy just took up a lot of time with me, and I truly appreciated that. When they moved, of course, we separated. However, we've maintained that connection and relationship through social media, especially now that we are older. I admire my cousin for the woman that she is today. In today's episode, we are going to discuss PTSD and many symptoms of PTSD. I didn't even think to have this as a topic of discussion on my podcast because I'm not as familiar with the disorder. The children that I work with, many have been diagnosed with PTSD, but it's just to that extent. So when I reached out to my cousin to be a guest, I asked her what did she feel comfortable discussing. She stated being diagnosed with PTSD and how it affects her to this day. I thought this would be a wonderful topic to shed light on because many people may be struggling with PTSD and don't even know it. So before we get into the topic, I'm going to have my cousin tell you all a little bit about herself.
Yes, I am Chrissy. I'm 29. I was diagnosed with PTSD this year, and this was actually the first year I started seeing a therapist on a consistent basis. I always kind of just figured that I was fine. So it was very, very interesting to know that the ways that I interact and cope with people or interact with people was actually because of my disorder. So I am the youngest of I'm the youngest girl on my mom's side, and I am the only girl on my dad's side. He has six sons and I'm the only girl. So I'm kind of like in the middle ground somewhere. So yeah, I don't know what else to say. That's me.
Then you just start a business. I know we have some Black Girl Magic going on over there. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I have a natural hair and skincare company called Noir is Gold. And I actually started that when I came back from Ghana. I brought some like unrefined shea butter from over there. I've been natural for years. And I've been like mixing my own concoctions up, and once I brought back the natural shea butter, I kind of wanted to get more in touch with like our roots and how our the Black women in our in the African community kind of like make stuff on their own. And when I brought that back, that's how the company started. And then it kind of grew from there. Like each product, I have three products, and each product has like a story as to how those got started. My shea butter can double as a body butter, but I use it on everything, on my hair, on everything. It's just my number one go-to. But it started out with going to Ghana and bringing back that shea butter.
That is very interesting for you to have that experience in Ghana, and just from how we know that they make their own natural products, and for you to come back and start making your own and then also starting your own business. That is true Black Girl Magic, and I am very proud of you. Now that you all know a little bit about Chrissy, we are going to dive into the meat of this episode. I'm going to share a little background information on PTSD, also known as post-traumatic stress disorder. It is a disorder in which a person has difficulty recovering after experiencing or witnessing a traumatic event. Some traumatic events can include war/combat, a natural disaster, a terrorist attack, a serious accident, rape or other violent personal assaults. PTSD was originally thought to only impact soldiers. I know whenever I heard of PTSD, I always thought of soldiers, wars, combat veterans, etc. This is why PTSD was originally known as shell shock. That was the original name. However, it is now recognized that PTSD can occur after nearly any traumatic event. In my last episode, my friend Emily and I talked about how trauma contributes to depression and anxiety. Trauma also contributes to PTSD. It is a very common disorder, having more than 3 million cases per year, and women actually are at a greater risk than men. Like my cousin stated, she was diagnosed with PTSD this year, so I am going to have her share a little of her story with you all.
Well, so I guess I can start from the beginning. You know, we grew up on the west side of Chicago in a gang-riddled neighborhood. So there was a lot of GDs that lived on our block. So I always remember, like, you know, police chasing people up and down the street. We would hear gunshots all the time. You know, sometimes even seeing people, you know, dead. And that was probably my first interaction with trauma that we probably just didn't register at the time. Like, it was just something that was going on day to day. We always knew, you know, who was what, you know, who was what. And unfortunately, like, I even knew, you know, knew who to stay away from and things like that. They kind of took on like the role of a little bit of protectors. So we never kind of were scared of the gang members. They would tell us like, hey, you know, something is about to happen. Y'all need to go in the house and things like that. And then my first interaction with law enforcement was actually, they were chasing some guys through the neighborhood, and I would say at like 5 or 6, and we were outside with our friend, I was outside with my friends in my gate, and they came up to us and asked us, did we see anything? Mind you, an officer is not supposed to question anybody under the age of 18. There was no adults around, and had there not been someone in the neighborhood to stop them, they could have persisted, and we could have, like, something worse could have happened. So, like, that right there already broke the trust bond from who's supposed to be the protecting and serving of us. You know, right there, you're questioning us as a minor about illegal activities that we probably didn't know anything about. And had we said something, we could have been in trouble or worse, you know. So that was, you know, very, when I was going through it, I didn't register it that it was a hard life. But like, when I talk about it with other people, they kind of like, you know, look at me like, oh, you know, this isn't normal. And you know, those kind of interactions are you know, would be scary for anybody at any age. So my mom, like, my uncle, he passed away, and left my mom some money, and we kind of moved to Florida, and that's the way we got out of that environment. But still, I kind of, like, I went through other traumatic events, and before we moved, like, I was molested by a cousin when I was probably around five or six. And you know, I never said anything because I didn't know, and we were both children. So it was, I probably didn't know that I should have said something. So that kind of just, you know, went on until we kind of like separated. We didn't live in the same place.
And then also just want to point out, like, fear, you know, really stops a person from really, you know, speaking out.
And I didn't know if it was like, I haven't dug into that part of my life and through my therapy yet. to know, like, or to, I guess, figure out what I maybe have, what stopped me from saying something. Like, maybe if I felt like I was doing something wrong, because, and I just decided that if I say something and I would be in trouble, or if it would like hurt my mom or something like that, because she, you know, might not have known, or anything. So I just never said anything. And then when we lived in Florida, everything was pretty okay. Then I guess the next traumatic event that I experienced was 9/11. And we lived in Orlando, Florida. So after, so we, it was being televised. And when we got to class, they kind of just like had us sit there and watch it the whole time. Like watching the towers fall and, you know, the hysteria that was going on. And then they started having like speculations on where the next terrorist, terror attack was going to happen. And they kept saying Orlando, Florida, because it's Disney and things like that. And so they want to kind of get them, I guess they were speculating that they wanted to hit the next or the most people possible. So Orlando, Florida was like the place that they said that was going to happen next. So, you know, we're living in Orlando, Florida, and we've already saw two towers, you know, fall and things like that. And it's just, you know, watching the news was what they had us doing at school, instead of just saying, hey, you know, maybe this is not the best thing for a teenager. And I wasn't even a teenager at the time. I was probably like in sixth grade.
I recall that as well. I was definitely in grade school, and it was the same for us. We literally was sitting there watching it on TV.
And I was like, that, you know, thinking back on that, is like, I know that probably the adults were shocked about this, because this has never happened on America, you know, in America. But for us children, I was 2011. I was 11 years old. Like, I mean, no, not 2011. 2001 was when it was, and I was 11 years old. So, you know, I don't think that was the best thing for us. And then when we got home, that's the same thing. It was, the news was on and on and on, and that's kind of when I felt like I needed to pull away from watching news. So I just couldn't. I don't watch the news now, and I probably haven't watched the news since then. Because it just brings a lot of fear. Like, the news used to be informative, and now it's a lot of, you know, I need to break the biggest story, and and I just don't feel like it's beneficial. Like, I can probably read up on what's going on more so than watching a news. A news program, because you know, certain channels have their own agendas, and the anchors kind of report in the way that they feel rather than just reporting the news, the facts. So I guess going on throughout my life, when my mom, she had breast cancer for the first time when I was 12, and we ended up losing our house, and we moved back to Chicago. My uncle, he, you know, said he had a place for us to stay. So we moved back up here, you know, until my mom was able to get well and start working again. But before then, my uncle lost his place. So we ended up being homeless. We were kind of moving around from house to house until we kind of ran out. My mom, she has six kids. She has five, and she adopted my foster brother. And so that makes six. You know, having a lot of kids and staying on people's couches and things like that, they probably don't want that. We kind of, you know, probably stayed with people maybe a couple of days or a week or something like that. And then they were like, they can't, you know, do it anymore. So we moved on. I kind of felt upset about that, just because my mom, she helped a lot of people when she was able and, you know, well, but those people just you know, they, for whatever reason, they just didn't want to or couldn't help us. So that kind of like helped, that not help, but that kind of pushed me away from family. It just made me not trust, not trust that dynamic anymore. And then we ended up, eventually ended up into a homeless shelter. So we stayed there for, I'm not sure how long, but it wasn't very long. And my brother, he actually had a girlfriend that he met while we were living in Florida. She, they went to Job Corps, and her family drove to Chicago and picked us up and brought us back to Omaha and lived with her until we could, and until my mom could be well enough to work and things like that. And we actually did stay with them for, I believe it was a year or less, or probably less than. And once my mom was, you know, all healed and things like that, and she got a job and we were able to move out. So I guess moving on from there, and I keep missing, missing things. Also, but it's a lot that had happened, while we were, you know, transitioning and things like that. I had another incident where a different cousin, we were staying with, tried to mess with me while I was asleep. So that kind of like broke trust barriers. I did tell on when that happened, and I guess it didn't really go anywhere. My mom, you know, said something to his mother about it and things like that, because he was actually an adult. He was over 30 years old and I was 16. So she did tell his mom, and I'm not sure, you know, what happened from there, but he tried it again. So I like left, I moved out of, cause we were staying with him at one point. I moved out of his place immediately, and they probably, you know, kind of stayed there a little bit. And I moved in to my other cousin's house, who happened to have been his mom, and he tried it there. And that's when I told, like, you know, my sister and everyone else. At first I only just told my mom, but I had to tell everybody else, because it was, you know, it just didn't seem like there was going to be any fixing that unless I said something, you know, to a more to more people. But yeah, it's a lot. It's a, my life story was.
Yeah. And I knew of some things, but just listening to you, I like, yeah, a lot of things I had no idea about. And, you know, just to see how you are now, and I know you're still on this journey of healing, but, you know, I do admire your strength, you know, just from like what I see on Facebook and, you know, social media, you know, it seems like, you know, you are trying to, you know, hold it together. And I know it has a lot to do with, you know, the healing, you know, going to therapy and things like that. So it's admirable, but I had no clue. Like when I just named, like, you know, some things that could be traumatic events, you basically hit
every single one. Like, you know, even like the sexual assault. I was raped when I was in high school. It was date rape. We've been homeless. We've been, it's been a lot that we kind of went through. And I never took it as something that could affect me, you know, internally that much. Because unfortunately in our family, sexual assault has happened to all of us, that I know. I don't know if it happened to you, but like for all the women that I've known in our family, it's happened to us. And I just see them persisting on, and, you know, thinking that, you know, well, you know, you just work through it. And I got to a point where nothing was like something was not working. And that was me becoming less emotionally accessible. Like I would just operate as if, you know, I would just operate out of duty rather than out of emotion. I it would affect me in relationships where I couldn't connect to them. It would affect me with friendships and relationships and even connected to my family. But like I took the time yesterday to look up like symptoms and things like that. And that it was very interesting that I didn't do this before. Just because I wanted to have an objective viewpoint when I talked to my therapist. I didn't want to kind of like regurgitate, because you know sometimes if you know too much, you kind of start pinpointing things that you have and say, yeah, that's what it is. I wanted to just tell her what I feel and what went on. And a lot of these symptoms were things that I was experiencing and not even knowing that it was, that they were related. I was just thinking, okay, well, I act this way because of this. I act that way because of that. And not thinking that it's all because of my condition. So like, I'll read some of the symptoms that I found and kind of like relate them to how I feel or how I react. So there are, I found that there are four different types of PTSD, and the particular type that I have is avoidance, but they also have unwanted memories of trauma, avoidance of the situation, which is what I have, heightened reactions, anxiety, or depressed moods. Avoidance for me is I will basically remove myself from the situation and also remove contact from that person. So I would just, if it comes to, so say because of the people that, you know, hurt me, was in my family, I would just not go to family events. I would not speak to anybody that would invite them and things like that. That's how I kind of dealt with the situation. And then that also poured into my relationships, where it would be like, okay, well, once I get to a final straw, I'm done talking to you. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want anything. We're not going to talk it out. We're not going to do this. We got to this set point that I made, that I have in my mind. And then that's it. It's no coming back from there. And it doesn't display itself that way in my family relationships, like my immediate family. So like if I'm mad at my sisters or something like that, you know, I'll probably not talk to them for a little bit, but eventually I'll get back there. But in most other relationships, whether it's friendships or relationships, it's like once it's a done deal, it's a done deal. And I kind of wondered, you know, why was it kind of so easy for me to break off a relationship and kind of like not feel anything for that person going forward. And that's what made me kind of like explore going to therapy and seeing maybe if there's something more to that.
Yeah. So what age were you when you first sought out therapy?
I first actually had to go to therapy when I was in high school. I believe I was 16. And I didn't personally seek it out. It was my mom. She was, because she was sick and she was also diagnosed as the, with depression. I'm not sure who recommended it, but they had all of, us, well, all of my mom's minor children go to therapy. And I just, I wasn't diagnosed with anything at that point. I just had a counselor and we just talked a little while. We probably saw each other for no more than a month. And then that was it. And then, but that's when my little brother was diagnosed with ADHD and bipolar. They couldn't diagnose him with full bipolar because he was underage, so they just had it as ADHD. But when he became of age, it was transitioned to bipolar as well. And then my sister Jan, they also diagnosed her, but I'm not sure what it was, you know, what they diagnosed her with, but we did have to go. It was like kind of not a question or anything. It was just like, all right, we're going to the doctor and this is, you know, where we're going to be. But the second time was recently and it was, you know, this year. So 29.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel now versus when you were 16? Do you feel like therapy is working for you, or like how do you feel now?
I actually really like my therapist, and I intentionally sought out a Black therapist. It didn't even necessarily mm-hmm. have to be a Black woman, or it could have been a Black man, but I know that certain people cannot understand our circumstances, and I feel as though I probably wouldn't have been as open with someone who wasn't Black. Mm-hmm. Just because of, you know, talking about like my childhood and, you know, the gang violence and stuff like that. And I'm not sure that they would right. even understand that, you know, that was a kind of an everyday thing. And it wasn't, it plays a factor, but may not be in the way that they may think. Mm-hmm. So I found a Black therapist, and I actually feel like it's helping. It has helped. It's opened me up a lot, because I was so closed off to even displaying emotions, that now I'm able to, you know, tell people, I can now tell people how I feel rather than just like avoiding the situation and saying, well, forget them then, and, you know, move on about my life. Like if I feel like something is wrong or I feel upset or betrayed, then I can clearly state that without, you know, feeling bad about saying it. And that's what a lot of, like, I felt, you know, guilt. And that is also a symptom of PTSD. Mm-hmm. I think that it's helpful. It's very, very helpful for me. Like I still feel, even though she wasn't in my network when I switched jobs, I still found a way to go to her.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Let me read some more symptoms. These are the common symptoms of non-combat PTSD. And it's easily irritable or angry. I would get very upset at, you know, kind of minor things. And I may even not even blow up on that person, but I would be fuming, you know, underneath. It says reckless and self-destructive behavior. And that's for the examples of unprotected sex, reckless driving. I would, I guess, display some instances of self-destructive behavior. I do speed a lot, and that's something I'm working on as well. Mm-hmm. Easily startled. I was kind of scared of almost everything, and I still am. I am very, very paranoid, not to the point of like where I'm looking over my shoulder or things like that, but I also make sure that I have an escape route for any and every situation that could possibly happen in my head. So like if it's like, okay, well, I'm sitting in a car on a street that I don't know, I'm going to check all of my mirrors, my doors are going to be locked, and, you know, I'll have a way to get away if I need to.
Right.
I wouldn't, like, you know, have my back to a door or anything. I would always sit with my back to a wall so I can see the room.
Exactly.
Yeah. And problems with concentration. I still struggle with that. If you look at my computer screen right now, you would kind of think I was mad or something, because I have like over 15 tabs open, because that's how I bounce back and forth on multiple things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, problems with concentration. That one is a big one for me. I had to kind of like work my way down on that, and even just say, okay, well, I'm gonna just watch TV rather than watch my TV, have my phone in my hand, do this on a computer. Like that's kind of how I would operate. But I'm making small steps on trying to get better at just concentrating on one task at a time. Difficulty sleeping, falling asleep, and or staying asleep. I'm up and down with that. What has helped me with sleeping is going to the gym. So if I go work out, then I can come home and like go to bed. If I don't work out, then I'll probably be up until like 1 a.m. Yeah. And then I can't stay asleep very long. I try to sleep in. I'm like, oh yeah, today I don't have to do anything. I'm going to sleep in. I'll probably still get up at like 7 a.m., 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm just, like you said, even on weekends, I'm the same way. And I was just talking to my psychiatrist about this, and it's just like, because I could only sleep for 6 hours. And I'm like, I want to sleep longer. I'm like, I need like 8 hours of sleep, because during the day I have to take a nap because I'd be so tired throughout the day.
And that's I was like, how do people go to sleep and stay asleep like all day? I like wish I can do that.
Me too.
I'm like, man, I want to do a lazy Sunday where I just like, all right, I'm gonna go to take a nap and I'm gonna be asleep. And then when I wake up, I go back to sleep, but then it don't happen at all. the next one is a complete lapse in memory of a feeling of blacking out parts of the trauma. I did not have this. I remember each incident, but I have problems with memory in other areas. Like my short-term memory is kind of like terrible. I have to write everything down and or create a calendar event for myself or I'll forget. Let's see, the next one's perpetual negative expectations of the world. Yeah, and that plays a big part in like how I was just telling you about how you know, I would have my back to the wall so I can make sure nothing happens. Right. It's like, you don't go into normal, you know, places thinking that something is going to happen, but it's kind of always runs through my mind like something's going to happen.
Yeah, and I honestly like that you do like have that sense, because with me, I'm not going to lie, I'm not aware of my surroundings. No. And people just look at me like I'm crazy. Like, no, Ashley, you need to be aware of your surroundings. Yes. So it's like, I'm trying to work on it. Because like you say, you never know what could happen. I'll just be minding my own business. But it's like, I don't take the time to like just scope out the scene, check out the environment. Like, I don't do any of that. But I'm working on it.
Yeah,
that, so.
You do, need to, you at least have a little bit. You don't have to be as paranoid as I am. But look around, look, you know, check it out, see if anybody looks, you know, agitated or something, and just keep an eye out. it's continuous misattributed blame or self of self and others about the traumatic event. I did blame myself for most of it. But I did make sure that I gave some of the ownership to the person doing the act. I don't know if it was, I guess, right for me to give myself some of the blame. But, you know, I just kind of, I don't know. I don't know why I blame myself. But, yeah. That's all I can say. I really don't know. And that's probably something I'm going to have to dig deeper into with my therapist.
I was just about to say, yeah, you definitely should. Because, I mean, everything that you just said, I don't think so. I don't think any of that was your fault at all.
Yeah.
And I hate that you know, that you do feel that way. So, yeah, definitely try to work through that because it does not seem like any of that was your fault.
Yeah. This persistent negative emotional state and or the inability to experience positive emotions. And that's where I was kind of detached from showing any emotion, rather it was negative or positive. I couldn't, you know, well, I guess negative display more because I was angry a lot. And I was sad a lot, but like happy, like genuine happy, it never came. It was just like, okay, well, this feels good, but that's all. It wasn't, okay, well, am I happy with this, rather than does it feel good? And that's how kind of how I went through, you know, most of my relationships. It was just like, okay, well, it feels good now. And, you know, I kind of didn't expect to be happy. Which is now like me talking it through, it kind of seems sad, but that's just how I managed. It was like, okay, if I didn't become happy, then I wouldn't be let down. I expected something to happen. I just didn't know exactly what would happen. And then I would go through measures to kind of like prevent the thing from happening again that I've experienced before. So like, say if I was with somebody and they cheated on me, I know now that this relationship, I don't tolerate cheating. So, yeah. And then I would like kind of build on that until it's like a big block of don'ts rather than what I want. It was a list of what I don't want. Loss of interest or participation in a significant insignificant activities or activities once interested in. Well, if I ever told you about, you know, my what I thought I wanted to be when I was little rather than what I am now and things like that. I'm happy for where I am now, but when I was in college, I went to college for fashion design, and then I'm not a fashion designer right now. I don't even draw anymore. And that was like a big part of my life. Like growing up, that was my joy, was drawing and, you know, things like that. And then I kind of moved on to sewing, but for me to not even do any art right now is it was a clear sign that, you know, something changed in me. Feeling of detachment from others, as well as feeling like others cannot relate or understand the trauma or emotional burdens. I do feel the detachment, but I don't know if I so much relate to not thinking that anyone else can understand my emotional burdens, because I guess I downplay my burdens more so than anything. And so I feel like, you know, anybody can feel the way that I am, but and yeah, I would think that anybody can feel this way. But it's hard for me to connect to people because I'm learning how to connect again. So.
Right. And yeah, in regards to like, cause you know, I've been diagnosed like with depression, and for me, that stands out for me is because I feel like people just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I do detach myself from others. And, you know, I may feel like I'm a burden, but I just, in the back of my head, I just feel like you're not walking in my shoes. You don't understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that there are people that can relate, and especially from like your last episode where you and your friend, you kind of went through a lot, and you know, you guys had similar instances. So yeah. It's like, can you think of it as, you know, it may not be exact, but there is pieces and aspects that this person can relate to.
Exactly. Yeah, so now I am like getting to that point, but before, like when I was first, you know, just going through everything, it's like, well, first I think a lot of it came from embarrassment. So it was hard to open up to people because I was embarrassed, you know. And then that's why I'm like, okay, for example, like none of my friends' parents, they didn't do drugs. So like how could they relate to me, you know? But as like now I am starting to see like, you know, especially with me sharing my story, you know, just the people that reach out, like, you know, similar situations. Like I said, it's not exactly the same, but definitely similar situations.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm glad that you're actually opening up and sharing your stories. Just so you know that you're not alone, and truly people care. So.
And I feel like the first part of healing is talking about it. So that's why, like I say, I didn't know you've been through so much. So just to hear you share your story, it means a lot. And I just honestly now feel like I say, the first part to healing is actually talking it out.
Yeah, it is. And that's where I really started healing when I talked about it. Like I would go and kind of like graze through. People would ask about, oh, so, how was things when you were growing up? And I would say, oh yeah, I moved here, I moved there, I moved there. And I would like speed through it. So it's like I don't have to give you the details of I was homeless, or I don't have to give you the details of my mom had breast cancer 3 times and things like that. And I don't, because I didn't want anybody to feel sorry for me. So I would just like I was very good at, all right. I know this is the speech. The speech is short and sweet to the point you think that, oh yeah, you've seen a lot of places and everything was wonderful. And I didn't have to go and actually talk about it. Like when I did talk about it, I would always cry. And I never understood why. Like why did I cry when I talked about my childhood? And until now, like I'm now able to speak about it and not cry because I'm working through it now. I'm unpacking what I felt at those at that time and how it affects me now. And a lot of it affects me now, even with me not really having a relationship with my dad. Like that affects you so much, like in my opinion. Like I have like related my interactions with men, with my interactions with him. It's like, okay, well, he was very emotionally detached. He'll come around whenever he feels like it, and then it's gone. And that's the type of like cycles that I kept running into with men. It would be like they were only available, for a short while, and then they're gone, and then they come back, and then they go, and then they come back. And that was like, it was hard for me to understand, like what is wrong? What's going on? And that's just how I allowed myself to be interacted with. And that was just all I knew. That's the male, quote unquote, male role model that I had, is like, it's okay for me to be here one day and be gone the next.
And I definitely like I'm you know that's something that I'm trying to work on in therapy now because you know my dad left when I was one and I haven't had any successful relationships and I'm honestly trying to understand like why you know and I just felt like you know a lot of it I feel like because my dad wasn't here to you know show me or teach me how a man should love me. Like he loved me from a distance. So a lot of guys that I come in contact with, like it's love from a distance. And like you say, they're here one day and then they're gone the next. So I totally relate to that as
Yeah.
well.
It's like unpacking a big bag, and it's like everything came from somewhere, and I'm trying to figure out the pieces. And that relationship aspect, I think, plays a lot with my relationship with my father. And it's like I keep allowing him to come back, and that's kind of how those relationships come. And And right. like even recently, I just like, all right, I'm deleting these people. I don't care if you can yeah. reach out to me. It doesn't matter anymore because I'm done with the yo-yo situation. And mm-hmm. I've tried to have a relationship with my dad. I tried, you know, me being the one yeah. reaching out, but ultimately it wasn't my doing for us to not be in contact. It was him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Yeah. But that's
no, you definitely have shared a lot. This conversation was very insightful, and I just thank you for providing all of this information.
Thank you. I'm glad you you know had me on the show. It's I really love your podcast, and I love hearing about your story because you've been through a hell of a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I always do, I do want to end with a quote, and I did find this one specifically for you. It's by Michael Templet. Mm-hmm. It says, always remember, if you have been diagnosed with PTSD, it is not a sign of weakness. Rather, it is proof of your strength because you have survived. And like I say, I totally admire your strength. You have been through so much, but to see you, you know, continuing on, just still, you know, on this journey of life, this journey of healing, and it's amazing. So thank you so much for sharing. I know others will be, you know, out there will be able to relate. Like I said, I didn't even think of PTSD as a topic, so I'm just so glad that we were able to touch on this.
Yes, thank you. It's something that, you know, a lot of our people in the Black community go through, and they just don't know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm glad that you were able to bring this topic to your show, and at least somebody can kind of take these symptoms and, you know, figure out maybe I need to go see someone about these things.
Right, exactly. Okay, well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to talk to you all in my next episode.
Thank you.